Hello, Crowdies, and welcome to the most 2020 of our Crowded in Here episodes. This is the final episode of the first season, and well, it's a little bit different. This was not a normal year, and this episode didn't turn out exactly how I had hoped. But I think you'll enjoy it. So let's get started.
Crowded House, great band, or the greatest band?
It's the soundtrack of my youth. Listening to Crowded House now just feels like a warm hug.
Welcome to episode 107 of Crowded in Here. The opening song was Even Now by Piranorama, a band here in Richmond, Virginia. You'll hear more from the band later in this episode, and I'll post information about the band with videos on our Facebook page. Our guest is Leon Kirkbeck, affectionately and maybe more popularly known as Buttons. Buttons is part of the star-studded team that brings you the podcast, The Cryptid Factor. If you like Bigfoot, chupacabras, or aliens, you'll love The Cryptid Factor. You may not know that Buttons is really the star of the show because, well, his name isn't mentioned in the show opening. You'll hear Rhys Darby and Dan Schreiber, but you won't hear Buttons. My plan was to rectify that. But as you'll hear in the interview, we didn't quite get to that. In true 2020 fashion, our second interview didn't happen, and I wasn't able to get you Buttons' take on time travel and its connection to Crowded House. We did discover some other unexpected insights, though. Maybe 2021 will reveal the time travelers among us. Without further ado, my favorite time traveler expert and apologist, Buttons. You're in Auckland, I assume.
Yep. That's right.
Whereabouts in the city?
So we're actually out in a little bit of a country lifestyle block. Oh. We call them out here. Yeah, it's like a little 15 acres. And it's you'll have to apologize that because we're living very close to the flight path of our military airport. And I say our military airport because the truth is we only have one military plane and only one military airport. It takes off and they practice. I don't think it's ever been used in anger, this plane, but they certainly fly it around every once a week or something, just I think to check that the propellers still turn and that probably the 60-year-old pilot can still, you know, sit there and hold on and guide it through the air in the right way.
Well, are you guys doing all right? I know you've sort of been up and down with the lockdown, and sounds like you're in pretty good shape now. Of course, you have leadership. We don't.
Wow, I tell you what, it is crazy how the how normal life is here now. It's like everybody's just getting on with life, and we're going to concerts and we're going to sports games and we're, you know, going to the shopping mall and what have you. And we have updates every day, and they say there's 2 new cases of COVID today, and they're both in managed isolation. And, you know, you sit there and you kind of, to some degree, actually feel a little guilty that we're one of the only countries that actually you can go and see the national orchestra play. You know, it's really crazy. And when you go to these concerts, they kind of proudly stand up and say, you know, this is the only orchestra playing to, you know, crowds in the world at the moment. Or you go to a horse racing event, and it's like, this is the only, you know, populated horse racing. But, you know, it's kind of crazy. Yeah. The truth is, we're so adaptive as a population. We're straight back to it. Everybody's hugging everybody, straight back in there. It literally, at the back end of it, hasn't felt that much has changed as far as interaction with people. So there's a little bit of hope for the rest of the if you're sitting there thinking that you're never going to hug anybody ever again, yeah, there's hope.
So you were living in New York City for some time, right? Recently.
Yeah.
How long were you there?
Well, we were there for 2 years and moved my wife and our 4 kids over to New York. And, you know, we did that because we have a production company here, like we make documentaries and do a lot of marketing, you know, work. And we thought that we should go off to the hardest market in the world and try and start an office there, and it was going really great, to be honest with you. We're having so much fun. We actually had our office in the office of the Brooklyn Nets, and we were working with Brooklyn Nets, and it was really great, and you know, a lot of really fascinating people, and you know, so it's, you come from New Zealand, you're so isolated and you're so in the end of the world that there's always a dream to get out of New Zealand and to go out and see the world, and cities like New York and London, they really are sort of like a pinnacle. And so many New Zealanders just have this innate desire to want to get there, to make it, to prove to themselves and maybe to the rest of the country that it's that you've done something worthy. The truth is, you get there, right? And it's like, as they say, wherever you are, there you are. Or however the saying goes. Yeah. Is that a saying? I just make that up?
Wherever you go, there you are. Yes. Wherever you go.
Yes. Right. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Something like that. And anyway, we were having a great time, and we were there, and to be honest with you, we were having such a great time. We had actually put an offer on a house in Connecticut. And then coronavirus hit, and literally a week out from settlement on that place in Connecticut, we were packing our bags, and within 36 hours, we were up and out and heading back to New Zealand. Not because we gave up on the States, but largely because the company we have back here in Auckland is about, employed about 50 people. Mm. And like most countries, most companies around the world, we saw a drop off in 85% of revenue. It was, you know, panic stations, really. So we had to come running back, really, more than anything, to support the team back here and to really get to action stations to save the company, for want of a less dramatic term. And again, happy to say that now that everything's sort of slowly coming back to life here, the company is a lot healthier, and we're starting to see what the back end of it looks like. And so maybe we'll come back to the States and continue the dream. We loved it there. We love the state.
So tell me a little bit about your work. Tell me what you do and how you got into doing.
So if people have listened to your podcast, you would have heard an interview with a wonderful man called Jeremy Ansell, who, it's very hard to come onto your podcast after somebody like he has been on it.
He's
He was really amazing. And
he's a wealth of information.
Yeah.
Insane wealth of information. So he and I actually worked at the National Radio together, at Radio New Zealand, together, both as audio engineers and operators, we were called then. And we would go and do the news shifts and, you know, sort of basically do the sound engineering for the announcers talking and play the inserts and do the editing and what have you.
How did you get into audio engineering? Did you have fascination with that before?
It's a really good question. And Thames, the little town that we were talking about before, that raised me, along with obviously my family and my parents, that I was raised amongst, it's a small town, 5,000 people. And it's fair to say, I think I'm somewhere on a spectrum of some sort. Yeah, like I don't know. I certainly don't necessarily fit the normal mold that schooling. Anyway, undiagnosed, but I'm fitting into a school system certainly didn't work for me at all. But I knew all through school, the one thing that I really loved was sound engineering, radio. I played in bands, and I just loved getting on all the dials and the knobs and what have you. And funnily enough, on a school trip, we went down to National Radio, Radio New Zealand, where Jeremy and I ended up working when I was probably 15 years old. And we went into the control room where they were currently putting the radio show to air. And I saw the guy behind the desk, you know, lining up the reel-to-reel tape player and, you know, fading the faders. And it blew my mind. I was like, that's what I have to do. That's my calling in life. Yeah, it was quite a moment. And the fact that the rest of the class moved on and I sort of snuck back and went up to that guy whilst he was working, probably an inappropriate thing to do, but I went up and said, hey, how do I do what you do? And he wrote down the name of this guy and his phone number. And I took that home and I pinned it up on my board. And then I got nearer the end of school, after a couple of years, a little radio station was starting up locally. And I knew that I was failing at school and there's no way I was going to go to college. So I basically, my dad got me an introduction to the guy starting the radio station. And I went there and met him, and he said, look, there's no jobs for you, but I do need the building, which is pink because it used to be a women's gymnasium. I need it painted white. So if you want to drop out of school and paint the building white, you're more than welcome. And I thought, well, if I do that, then I'm at least around them and it might lead to something. So I did that and painted this thing, which had, like, you know, 10 meter high ceilings, or the, you know, three or four sticks sellotaped together and with a roller on the end. And it was a horrible job. Whilst that was happening, the technicians were coming in and setting the station up. So I would sit there and take the manual of the mixing desk and sit there and read it and try and figure out how it worked. And, you know, sort of just studying, of all things, the wiring diagram to see how, I don't know, you know, it was a little bit extra. But and then sure enough, by the time the radio station opened, it turned out that I was the only guy who knew how the place kind of worked and knew where all the transmitters were positioned in and around all those places where you were. There was one in Cook's Beach and Pauanui, and there's it's quite a hilly terrain and a peninsula. So there was about six transmitters and I had to go and check them. And so I ended up getting a job there. You know, and got into radio. And then sure enough, a couple of years later, I see a pamphlet that ends up on my desk somehow. And it had a whole bunch of jobs in the radio industry in it. And on there was a little ad with the guy's name and exact number that I pinned on my wall about 3 or 4 years earlier as a little 15-year-old.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so I called them and got a job down in Wellington at this national radio place, and, you know, and fate took over the rest and introduced me to Jeremy. And
how long were you at Radio New Zealand?
Only a couple of years, because as it happened, one day I was walking to the radio station. And the best way to get to the radio station was there was a shortcut through an old cemetery, a very, very old cemetery, which doesn't get used anymore. And the cemetery, you know, hasn't obviously changed in decades. And I'm walking through one day and there's a whole bunch of new old graves that have popped up, if that makes sense. So like old and, but there was like, they weren't there before. Turns out they were part of a set for a Peter Jackson film called The Frighteners, which is one of his very first sort of American centric films, you know, okay. It's set in America, but was shot here in New Zealand. And there was a guy lifting a bunch of lights into the back of a truck. And he clearly looked like he was struggling. So I offered to help him. And then during that, he's basically said, do you want to come along and help on the movie set? They were doing, you know, they're doing night shoots and doing this horror show. And so I did. And then they kept asking me to come back and helping. And then that led to me basically getting into the film industry and doing lighting and camera work on films. And then, so that took me away from radio and then got me into film. After that, I worked on Hercules and Xena and and then into theater sound and lighting and what have you. So it was only, unfortunately, it was only a couple of years at National Radio, but it was before meeting my wife and having my kids, the best 2 years of my life. Disclaimer.
Qualifiers, right?
Yeah.
That's smart.
And I tell you, some of the adventures, you look back now and you know, don't appreciate these days as much as you should, but in this amazing old building, which is unfortunately no longer there, called Broadcasting House, it was this basement to Broadcasting House where all of us kind of cheeky young engineers used to sort of go down and break into. And it's a really quick, but you know, probably one of the best spookiest stories of my life is that was down there with Graham and Jeremy and a couple of others, and we broke in from this basement that we had broken into the basement of the government house next to us.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, through this, there's a hole in the generator wall, and we sort of had to boost each other up and crawl through this sort of broken hole in the wall. And it turns out it was this whole massive subterranean concrete complex where every government department had basically a bunker, and it hadn't been used in years, but they hadn't obviously cleared out everything. They just left all of these places, and some people had obviously come in and sort of ransacked stuff. There was upturned things, but there was still, like, the Department of Seismology, there were still rolls of paper with all of the, you know, seismic drawers and drawers and drawers of it. There was the Department of Defense where there was all these little black balls with numbers on it and like a little lottery kind of ball thing. Turns out there was conscription balls for like World War II and all this kind of stuff. It was like, it was amazing, but it was all completely abandoned. And we're in there literally with like little weak torches, like imagine Stranger Things, and it's exactly that plus X-Files, but a bunch of complete idiots, you know, down there. And then there's even better, there's water dripping down, like there's a water main that's burst, so there's about this much water, and we're sloshing through the water, and then we're like, it is terrifying. And then we hear up down this little narrow walkway that we're walking down, we hear down the end of the walkway as we're walking down there, completely freaking out, we hear something run through the water away from us. You hear splash, 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 splash. Yeah. Now, it might have been a bunch of rats, it might have been, who knows, but we turned and got the hell out of there. Like, honestly, we're like, ah! We screamed like little boys and got the hell out of there, and we came back with slightly stronger torches, and the only weapon we could find was an old broken broomstick. And but we went back in there, and we went to fire stuff. And the terrifying thing is that in this room where we heard the running through the water, we get into this room And it's like a series of about four or five concrete cages with metal bars in the front and doors. And on the back of the thing, it says like tuberculosis. And another one said another disease or something. It was like testing cages, like they had monkeys in there or something. It was, who knows? We never really got to the bottom of it. We sort of, but it was like, so honestly, it was great. It was the best time.
Is fantastic. So how does Cryptid Factor, when does this happen? How does, I mean, somewhere along the line you meet, I'm assuming you meet, you know, David Ferrier and Reese, and
yeah,
how does that all come together?
Wow. So Reese, I mean, the other industry that I've been involved in a long time in New Zealand is the comedy industry. I've been very lucky to have sort of been around the very early days of stand-up comedy becoming an industry in New Zealand. And so I used to take on tour visiting international comedians and do all the technical work, the lighting and the sound and what have you. Yeah, it was great. We had great American comics like Dom Irera and what have you. And we had, you know, UK, a lot of British comedians, Simon Pegg and, you know, like all these, Alan Davies and Rich Hall, all these great comedians. It was a really special time because it was right before they all kind of really took off, all these comedians, before their big film careers and TV careers. So I met Reese back in the early days, very, very briefly, and his wife Rosie had a sort of a bar, a performance space and a comedy kind of focus bar. And I met him there one night, but then didn't meet him again until after Flight of the Conchords, and he had moved back to New Zealand. And I helped, Rosie contacted me through a mutual friend to help film a little promo video for the comedy festival. The video is still on YouTube, I'm sure, and it's Reese being a manager for these other two comedians. And so I made that little video, and through that became good friends with Reese and Rosie, and we have children very similar age, and so we just stayed friends, and we became closer and closer friends. And that would have been, oh shucks, it was both of us only had one child, or we had two and our third one on the way, and they had their first child and the second one on the way. So it must have been a good 12 years ago now or something like that. And we've just remained really good friends since. But one thing that happened not long after meeting was that Reese told me that this guy, David Farrier, who I hadn't really met yet, had only had a few email conversations with, they were starting a radio show on this dance music station in Auckland here, which I thought of weird because I thought, well, I know Reese definitely isn't into dance music, and I wouldn't have thought David Farrier, who's, you know, quite a particular character, but dance music doesn't, he's more into grunge and metal and death metal and stuff.
Right, really.
And he said, no, it's actually for cryptozoology. And at that stage, to be quite honest, I didn't actually know the word cryptozoology, because it's, I think, only become really quite popular in recent times. You know, there's a lot more people, I think, know the term now. But back then, it wasn't very widely known. But funnily enough, I've always loved the unknown. I had books on Bigfoot and, you know, strange mysteries and, you know, all of these sort of unknown paranormal occurrences, and they've always really sparked my imagination and always been really drawn to it. So when they said they were doing this, I said, well, actually, I've been a radio producer in the past and an engineer, so would you like some help doing it? And they were like, yes, please, because we don't know how all the buttons work on the desk, and so we're a bit terrified. So I literally came in just purely to help them do the button. And it's funny because we had our first meeting, which I wish we recorded. But we sat down there and went, right, okay, so we got this radio show. You know, they were like, oh, we want to do the segment about doing the Weekly World Weird News, and oh, we'll call it that. And I said, what we need is some clocks. And they were like, why do we need clocks? I was like, no, it's a thing in radio where you actually, you have the clock and you basically just draw a circle and you start doing the segments and you go, right, first 15 minutes is this. And then, you know, a couple of music tracks, which is about 8 minutes. So this, and you see, you basically just segment out a pie graph into what you're going to, do. So, which they thought was just hilarious that I was actually trying to apply some kind of science to this music, dance music radio station.
Yeah, structure doesn't seem to be the...
No, it's not... certainly never became our strong suit and certainly hasn't become since. And so we went on and they said, look, you know, and if we're really struggling, if there's, you know, if it's not going great, then, you know, you're welcome to join in, you know, you should join in as well. And I'm like, no way. There's no way. You guys will be amazing. You're a massive comedy star. You're a, you know, journalist and
yeah.
At that stage, not documentarian, but he certainly was well loved. And on the very first episode, they like it was really clear that they were a total mess and they really needed me. And so I started piping up a little bit to help them out because I could see where they were leaving gaps and I needed to fill the gaps that they were leaving.
Yeah.
And at that point, Reese was like, you know, basically told me, tried to put me in my place and you know, basically said, you're here just to do the buttons. And therefore the name Buttons came about. They started calling me Buttons. And it's unfortunately stuck to a point where...
Unfortunately?
Well, actually, at the time, funnily enough, at the time, I just, my company that is now growing up to be a grown-up company was quite young. And so there was a part of me that was a little bit concerned that some of our clients might churn into this dance music station at 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning. And so having a suit. Yeah. And so it was like a hidden pseudonym and people were like, I'm sure I heard you. I was like, no. No, that was this idiot called Buttons, not me. I'm a very reputable businessman. I do business. Yeah, and so we've been doing it since. And David Farrier had to go off and do a TV series called Dark Tourist and took his career on a little bit more of a serious angle, doing Tickled and all of these kind of investigative journalist things. Mm-hmm. And so he had to opt out. And then we had this guy Dan Schreiber, who was a very good friend of Reese's, and an amazing human. And like, if ever you wanted to try and find a replacement or a replica of David Farrier, Dan Schreiber is, you know, the best you could possibly.
Yeah, he's great. And you can just tell he's a great person too. That comes through. Yeah. So
and it's very close. And seriously, no doubt, much like you're doing this podcast, it's for us. It's great that we do it and it's great that we have an audience and we love the people that listen, largely because if people are listening, they either love to laugh and, you know, and laugh at our expense, which is what we want, or B, you have very open minds and don't mind thinking about, like us, you know, about the stuff that we don't yet know about. And we certainly don't have any answers and unlikely ever will, but we certainly like pondering and you know, we like to say we take the pseudoscience of cryptozoology and ufology and all this, we take that seriously, but in the process we certainly don't take ourselves seriously at all,
right?
not even close.
All to our benefit for sure.
Yeah, it's great.
That's great. I love it.
I tell you what, even I've got to say that, like, and this is what something I wanted to talk to you about. It's really quite mind blown, and maybe it's a sort of a classic New Zealand psyche issue that, in the fact that we have this thing called a tall poppy syndrome, and I don't know if you've heard it before. I think it's quite unique to New Zealand in the fact that you, basically the guts of it is that you don't want to be the tall poppy because that's the one that gets cut down first. So, you know, just, you know,
sort of humility.
You don't want to stand out. And in the States, we actually, when we do business with the States, we actually have to really adjust our thinking, because when people say to us, hey, I saw that movie you made, it's fantastic, the natural thing for a New Zealander to do is to go, no, it's nothing. It's actually terrible. I hate the ending. It's a mess. We can't accept not often can we accept a compliment, because we don't want to necessarily seem like we've got an ego, or we want to be humble or something. I don't know what it is, but we certainly don't want to say, yeah, it's great, isn't it? You know, I'm glad you like it, because that's when people in New Zealand would likely turn around and be like, oh, he's a bit full of himself, isn't he? He's like, I said I liked his movie and he agreed with me. What an asshole.
Yeah, right.
So, but, and this is the thing with you doing a Crowded House, podcast and celebrating this band from New Zealand.
Yeah.
In brackets, Australia, if you want to go down that path.
Not anymore. I guess Nick is from Australia, so they're still in Australia. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say, and that's one of those things. When I heard that an American was doing a podcast on a band that was obviously really special to us as a country, it still is really flattering, and it's really quite amazing to know the impact that it had on the world. Because back when they were huge in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah,
we sort of had an idea that they were huge, but of course, without the internet, you couldn't really. It's not like Lord or Benny or any of our musicians now, because you get a really instant sense of their global impact. Yeah. But back then, I remember this time, the very first time that I was watching an American TV show. I want to say it was Friends, but I don't think it was like a really well-known TV show. At the time, I wish I could remember it, but the point was that it was a big American TV show, and the scene was in a cafe or something, and the music in the background of the cafe was "Don't Dream It's Over" by Crowded House.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
and I just remember this feeling of like, oh my God, a New Zealand band is being played in the background, and I knew enough then to know that they had chosen that. It wasn't just accidentally there; that was chosen because it was a popular song, and that it was, you know, in my eyes, it was like quite mind blowing, and a really huge indication that they had made it, that Crowded House were like, they were now a thing because they had made it to an American TV show in the background, ironically, just as elevator music, effectively. All right. But it's that thing of New Zealand. And I think it's something that's, really still I think is a driver for a lot of people, even like people like Reese and our actors and our celebrities, if you like, here are driven by those kind of moments where you actually have this little glimmer of a proof point that we've made it, that a New Zealander or our music or our art or our, I guess, our making is being proven on the world stage. And it's funny how much of a driver it is. And it's interesting, because I think in dissecting Crowded House and their music and also their trajectory into fame rather, I think would have been a big driver, and a lot of that kind of sentiment I think can be found in a bunch of their songs.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that humility and that that cadence of sort of not wanting to be too proud or too self-assured, maybe. I don't know.
It's interesting. Their first album did okay here in the States. Obviously Don't Dream It's Over was a huge hit. Mm-hmm. And then, their second album after that, they really didn't have much commercial success here in the States. Mm-hmm. But I wonder how much of that humility played into it, because the party line is, oh, you know, Capitol Records didn't treat them well, and you know, so and so didn't treat them well. But I wonder how much of it was just a lack of self-promotion, you know, a lack. You know, we're the greatest band on the planet,
and I would say a naivety as well. Don't get me wrong, you know, Neil and the whole band, they're very far away from naive. They're genius and they're incredibly successful. And but I think in the New Zealand psyche, the issue with New Zealand psyche, particularly back then, I think different now to a degree, but I think there probably was a naivety around how to cash in on the burgeoning of that success, and how to best promote yourself, and that ability to be able to stop and actually say, yes, I am actually really good, and yes, thank you, my music is amazing.
Crowded House's sixth album was called Intriguer, and Intriguer is sort of this mysterious character that the guys in the band basically used to explain unexplainable happenings. You know,
really?
So they arrive in New York City, and they go to their apartment that they're going to stay in, and it's a blaze. I mean, it's on fire. And
that actually happened.
Yep, yeah, for real. And so
wow,
they blame this person, the intriguer. Now,
I love it.
Also, some experience in Amsterdam that there was just one of their songs is called Amsterdam, and it kind of I guess alludes to this really bizarre, awful day that they had. But they sort of blame this character of the intriguer, and the way they explain it is, how this person kind of has an impact on the unusual events of their lives in foreign places. And it's this idea of this person that kind of shows up.
I like that.
Maybe kind of impacts their lives, kind of sits back from a distance and kind of laughs at their misery and misfortune. But
that's good.
And it made me think of, and I can't remember if this is something you all have talked about on the podcast or not, but these videos that you see where somebody shows up and they close a door just in time for somebody to, you know, so they don't get run over by a car or something, you know, those kinds of things, you know, who are these time travelers that save somebody? You can't explain, you know, why they're there, when they're there. And then all of us, you know, and it's just, and then they disappear. You never find them again. Right.
Like guardian angels and all that kind of rhetoric.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, and I know you're big on the time traveler. You've got this time travel theory that I think the world should hear. So, just thinking about if you want to try to make some kind of a connection there.
Yes. Nothing makes me happier. It's like, get comfortable, everybody. Settle in.
Yeah. This has been, again, another highlight of 2020. So thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
And I'll pass that on to the guys.
And here's a little background on how we got here.
Piranhas, shake me about, bring me out and see if I've changed, because we are back. Oh my god.
Oh, I totally forgot about your new intro scheme.
It's my favorite bit of the show.
Hey,
But hey, we should quickly say to any of our listeners that didn't know this, we've been sort of the three of us having little excursions recently on other people's shows. So we were on Den of Geek, the great website.
That's right.
We were interviewed about the cryptids of the world, and that sits up on their Facebook page. So that's us talking for like close to an hour, I guess. And then we were part of some scavenger hunt that we were meant to judge, which we still have not had any of the entries for.
And what I love, though, is that you guys are starting to, especially Buttons, feel what it's like to be a celebrity, which is what he's enjoying.
Honestly.
And that's whereby the phone doesn't stop ringing. And, you know, once you're hot, you get on other things and people are going, oh, I want a piece of him. I want a piece of those guys. And that's where we're at.
Isn't it? It's exciting. I've always wanted somebody to want a piece of my ass.
On that note, Buttons, before the show, revealed to us some even more exciting news on this same kind of wave. But it's, tell the listeners, Buttons.
Well, I didn't want to. I mean, I was genuinely concerned about telling you guys because I don't want you guys to think less of me because I'm becoming a little bit more well known than you guys, you know. Somebody reached out to us and asked me if I would be on their podcast just on my own without you guys. They specifically said this is a request for Buttons to come on my podcast.
What did I say before the show when I heard that?
You said, no way, there is no way that you are going on another show.
On your own.
On my own.
Yep.
For fear of my health and safety, was it?
Yes.
Was it health and safety?
Well, yeah, that's right. Because I said, what did I say? I said it could be a trap. Now, I'm worried about you. I know people go, let's get the naive one in. Let's get that. Well, if we can grab one of them,
we can,
because, you know, clearly we're the greatest show in the world. It's like when the cheetah goes for the gazelle that's got the gammy leg.
Yeah, that's exactly. Well, hang on. No, it's not like that. It is not like that at all.
I hope it's not. I think I should go with you on this. When you can't go out on your own without Dad. Tell us what the show's about.
Wow. It's about a band, a New Zealand band called Crowded House.
The New Zealand band, yeah.
I thought they're Australian.
No!
How dare you, Dan? That's why they didn't want Dan. His Australian-ness that comes through every now and again. Okay, so it makes no sense. What do you know about Crowded House?
Well,
unless it's a sound engineer question.
No, it could be. It's a little bit of all of that because Andy, this guy Andy, who reached out to me, he said...
I thought it was Kyle.
No, Andy. No, Kyle's the one who reached out to do some illustrations for us. I got a little
bit... The story's faltering.
No, it's Andy. I meant to say Andy. I got confused.
When he called you, did he say, is Reese there, please?
No, he's not, but I can do this for you.
Is Reese there, please?
No, I know Crowded House.
Reese has worked with Neil Finn.
No, I have. Reese is gone at the moment. I'll come.
Look,
is Dan there, please? Is Dan there?
No, he's Australian. Yeah, you don't want him.
It is true, though, that he did write an email and he got through to us through the Patreon. And he says, I cannot tell you how excited I am.
Wow. Is that because he's actually not excited? He can't tell you. If only I was excited, I'd be able to tell you that I was. But I can't because I'm not. But having recently heard that Dan and Reese are unavailable, please, if you're the last resort,
I would
almost like to chat with you about Crowded House.
Okay, that's a yes. Hello?
Look, and the other message that he sent, he says, guys, it's Andy Lacatel, in brackets, past researcher. So he was a researcher.
He's a researcher.
Exactly. And he says, I have a podcast Crowded in Here. That's the name of the podcast, Crowded in Here.
Okay.
And he says, I need some star power for my podcast. And he says, so rightly, I'm inviting Buttons, the true star of the Cryptid Factor, to join me on my podcast. So.
Well, we are truly living in unprecedented times. 2020.
This is just what people are writing, and I'm just relaying it. And good. So I'm going to be on a thing. All that's right, good.
We'll give you permission, but don't get too excited. This isn't the start of a new thing, okay? You're not going solo. It's not the Buttons show.
Well, Andy might need a co-host for the Cryptid,
the Cryptid House.
It's Cryptid in Here. It's getting, the Crowded in Here podcast. Maybe okay. He's got an offer for me.
See if you can get your name in the title sequence of his podcast. that would be amazing. I'll do it for one. But there's one exception I'm going to ask for. That would be hilarious.
Thank you all for listening to the Crowded in Here podcast this year. It's been fun putting this together and making new connections with fellow Crowded House fans. I look forward to bringing you some great content in 2021. While we're on break, please catch up on past episodes. Until then, you have a great holiday season and happy new year. And with that, take us into 2021, Piranorama.
Hey, Crowdies, this is Chrissy.
And John.
From Piranorama.
Alone together with you.
And we're so excited that you're listening to our music.
Check out our video for Even Now and see what kind of fun we had filming.
Rocking out with a swamp monster. And you can find all our music on Bandcamp or anywhere you like to stream. Or pick up our 7-inch from BrokersTipRecords.com.
You can also view live performances and other videos on YouTube.
Crowded House rules!
Tell me, are you retreating to the wilderness? And tell me who hasn't kind of felt all this? I know that it seems trite staying up all night. I know it's a cliche. I sleep through all the TV shows I try to. Sometimes I think it's a shame. Oh no. should come in handy in a flood. I'm pretty good at treading water, but I get the feeling someone's pulled the plug. I'm going down, down, down the drain pipes, the pipes are calling. Dreaming of something and finally forgetting I'd always had a fear of falling away. Apparent, it's rendezvous in the warm Paris air. I don't know, but my dad knows her parents, and he told me she'd be there. Side of town, heard the crime rate's going down. Imagine me on a property, it probably means you'll be seeing me around. Champagne is going flat.